We're going to meet Nelson Rince. He's an Extreme Ag member, and he also placed in the Oklahoma NCGA competition. We're going to talk to him about things that he's learned from Extreme Ag that he'd like to share with you to improve your bottom line and your farming operation.
Welcome to Extreme Ag's Cutting the Curve podcast, where real farmers share real insights and real results to help you improve your farming operation. This episode of Cutting the Curve is brought to you by Claas, where machines aren't just made, they're made for more. With a wide range of tractors, combines, foragers, and hay tools, Claas is a family business just as driven, demanding, and dedicated as yours. Go to Claas.com and start cutting your curve with their cutting-edge equipment. And now, here's your host, Damian Mason.
Hey there, welcome to another fantastic episode of Extreme Ag Cutting the Curve. Got Nelson Rince on here. Nelson is a Guymon, Oklahoma farmer. I've been to Guymon, by the way. Tough conditions out there. It's windy. I think there's tumbleweeds. I think there's like 14 people that live in the panhandle of Texas. He's one of them. And you wonder when you get there, why the hell would you try and farm this? They don't even get rain out here. But anyway, he did so, and he did so very effectively. He placed third in the Oklahoma strip-till irrigated class. But more importantly, he's an Extreme Ag guy, and he's learned quite a bit of stuff. And I think sometimes it's really cool to say what's worked for you that you'd like to share back with us. So tell us about your operation, Nelson.
So we farm corn, cotton, sunflowers, wheat. And on the NCGA stuff, we focused on the corn using products and practices from Extreme Ag to kind of push us over the top. The big part of what we did was just adding to our normal program. We added in PGR, some biologicals, and some stress mitigation products to help handle the heat and drought conditions.
I didn't even know what a PGR was until I started working with Extreme Ag almost 3 years ago, and Kelly Garrett talked about regulating the growth of a soybean. I said, regulating it, like stunting it? Doesn't that seem counterproductive? And they talked about getting soybeans that were 6 feet tall, falling over, et cetera. It started to make more and more sense to me. Did you use plant growth regulators prior to this thing that you're doing now with your corn?
No, only in the cotton, just to kind of help stunt the growth of it. This was the first time using it on corn.
Correct me here. Our only cotton producer with XA is Matt, and then Johnny Varel used to be, and Chad Henderson used to be. So you're still growing cotton out there in the panhandle of Oklahoma. Wasn't cotton one of the early crops to use PGRs? Because, as I think explained to me, it's basically a tree, and it'll grow a bunch of woody vegetation, and you don't want that. You don't want to try and go and harvest a bunch of damn trees. You want to harvest cotton. Isn't that one of the stories on why PGRs came to cotton?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And where we're at, we grow stripper cotton, so you really don't want it over knee high anyway. So you'd really try to keep it short for harvestability.
Nelson, for those of us that are from the Corn Belt, what's stripper cotton versus normal cotton?
It's stripper cotton, the machine, instead of, it takes everything off the plant except for the sticks, basically. And they just strip it off. It's tighter in the burr, so the wind and weather doesn't take it, or it doesn't drop on the ground quite as easily.
Understood. Quite a few things are growing out there. Cotton, sunflowers, sorghum, corn. Did you say wheat also?
Yes, we grow wheat. And this year we're going to dabble in some dry edible beans too.
So you don't get a lot of rain. Is the limiting factor out where you are moisture? I would have to think that the limiting factor is moisture, what you can do with what little bit of moisture you get.
Yeah, absolutely. And in our region, irrigation is key, but we're also limited by the amount of water that's in the aquifer below us. So we're right on the edge of being able to grow corn in some places, and that's why we grow cotton, is because it doesn't take nearly as much water as corn does, and we can stress it more, and it's just a better use of the water.
Are you using, is your irrigation system still pivot?
Yes. Yep. Okay. That's right.
What about subsurface? It seems to me when water is that limited, because I've been reading about the Ogallala aquifers problem since the 1980s, and eventually you're going to get my prediction is eventually you're going to continue to get dwindled down to where you're almost cut off is my prediction. But would you see a switch over to subsurface drip? Because, you know, like our friends at NetFM say, you use 30% less because of, you don't lose it to evaporation.
It's possible. There is some of that done, but on the scale that we're trying to irrigate, I don't know how effective that would be. We're running different nozzle packages. Like our sprinkler heads are less than a foot off the ground. They're really close together. So we're mitigating as much evaporation loss as we can. We're between 97-98% that gets in the ground.
Good. You seem like you got a lot going on. You joined Extreme Ag. You weren't illiterate about production agriculture beforehand, but you've joined it. What have you learned? Give me a couple of fun things that you've learned, because I think it's neat to hear some of the cool stuff. I'm not patting myself on the back. I just want you to tell me, have I recorded anything that you've listened to that you're like, you know what, Damien, that one thing that you guys covered, I really liked it.
Yeah, for sure. Everything. It makes me question a lot more things, and just listening to what the guys have to say kind of gets my wheels turning to think of, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How could we implement that there? Nothing really in particular sticks out. It's a lot of everything.
Tell me something that you've changed in the last couple of years, that whether it may be, like you said, it got your wheels turning, something, a big change you made in the last 2 years.
In the last 2 years, we started doing our own spraying. That was big for us. It used to be all custom applied. Nothing against the custom applicators, but I can be more timely. I can do all my test plots like I want to when I need to do it.
Yep.
We just saw a big difference last year, especially.
If I were a farmer, I would not want to do the spraying, because it's a whole lot of calibrating and a whole lot of exactness that I think would intimidate me. More importantly, it's also a whole bunch of expense. What was the hard thing for you to get past when you decided to go from hiring it done to doing it? There's the money, there's the adaptation, the learning, and, you know, then the technical aspect of it. What, tell me about your adjustment curve.
Just the workload mainly. We still hire a little bit done just because I just can't get around to everything like we need to. Getting up a little earlier in the day before the wind starts, that kind of thing.
It gets windy out there where you are in the Panhandle of Oklahoma?
Just a little. Just a little.
Someday, if you ever are in a place like where I'm from, we have these things called trees. I know you've never seen one out where you are, but it prevents the wind. Nelson, answer me this. What's the operation look like in terms of, you got a lot of different crops going on. Are you a sole operator? You've got mother, wife, sister, dad, uncle. What's going on there?
So me and my wife farm together. We started in 2021, but previously I've been helping a gentleman that I go to church with. This is my fifth year with him, and kind of looking to transition into his operation. So I farm my own stuff, and then I manage his too.
That's fantastic. You know what? I mean, it's a little departure from some of the stuff we were going to talk about, but that's a great situation. When we talk about younger people getting into agriculture, you've got an arrangement. It works for both parties, presumably.
It does. It's been super great. You know, I've grown up farming all my life, so I've been around it. My parents still farm, and this is kind of my way to get into something myself.
That's fantastic. So spraying's a new thing. Is there anything in 2024 that's new that you're going to roll out? What, a new product usage, a new practice, a new implement, a new thing? What are you going to roll out in 2024 that you haven't done before?
So we're going to keep doing, we're going to do more of what we did last year with the Extreme Ag stuff. We're going to try some different in-furrow products from different companies.
On which crops?
Mainly on corn. On the cotton side, we're looking at some different row configurations. Typical is 30-inch solid planted. We're going to try some 2-in, 1-out. And some 60-inch row spacing.
I don't know what 2-in, 1-out means. Remember, cotton is still a little foreign to me.
So we'll have two rows planted on 30-inch center side by side. Then we'll skip one row, have two rows, skip a row, have one row.
And the purpose of that, Nelson?
Is water conservation.
Okay. Does it create more weed problems, weed pressure? Does it create, are you going to lose yield on this? Or does the cotton fill out more? I mean, it's kind of like the population studies, population trials that the guys have done.
That's what we're trying to figure out. We've been in drought the past 2 years, and we went from 30-inch to 60 and didn't really study it. So our custom harvester that strips our cotton is also our seed company representative. So he's helping me put together this deal so we can have each test, harvest it separately, get it ginned separately, and really kind of know what we're looking at.
Cool. That's neat. All right. Let's talk about your contest plot that you did. So Western Oklahoma placed third. I'm guessing to do that, because I'm from an I state, what 41 bushel corn gets you third place in Oklahoma, right?
We were just a shade under 292.
I was jacking with you, Nelson. 292 bushels. What do you think it cost you? And this is a thing, the old crack on, oh yeah, they win yield contests, but it cost them, $1,000 to make $600 for the corn, whatever. I mean, I've heard that my whole life. Did you actually, granted, you wanted to push the limit on yield. Did mm-hmm. you also calculate, did it make you money? It made you yield. Did it make you money?
Absolutely, it did. And the cool thing about it is when I set up the plot, I had a full fertility with all the products that I got from XA, and then a reduced fertility. So where I cut our contest corn came out of the spot that had 25 pounds less nitrogen than the rest of the field did. So that was really cool.
Yeah, that's a great, first off, that's a success story on two fronts. You reduced something that we're getting headhunted about, let's face it, environmental policy, regulatory environment. I think we're going to have no choice but to cut back on nitrogen because of it's right there. It's happening. It's looming, this whole environmental thing. You cut back on nitrogen and you didn't cut back on yield. In fact, you boosted yield. That's a great story.
For sure. Our situation with the irrigation water, the more yield we can make with the same amount of water is going to be huge. It's pushing the efficiency of our water.
Yeah, I think where you are, I tell my ag crowds that water is going to be viewed increasingly as a crop input, just like fertilizer, seed, or pesticide, or anything else. And it's obviously forefront where you are. Not so much where I'm from in Indiana, but where you are, water is going to start having an economic number attached to it.
It for us, it already does. We're having to run quite a few wells. We pump with natural gas driven engines. That's an expense. Electricity expense to run the machines, upkeep. For us, when you start watering right after you plant and then you don't shut it off till September, that's pretty expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously then there's a political strife that goes along with it because of the environmental crowd at the state house versus the agricultural lobby. It's a tough thing. Hey, we're talking about fertilizer. I want to ask him a question about that. Before we do, I want to remind you about our business partner, Nature's. Nature's is focused on providing sustainable farming solutions and helping maintain crop potential for today and for your future generations. Nature's high-quality liquid fertilizers powered by Nature's Bio-K can be targeted at specific periods of influence throughout the growing season via precision placement techniques as a means to mitigate plant stress, enhance crop yield, and boost your farm's ROI. Nature's, N-A-C-H-U-R-S. Go to natures.com and check it out. Fertility, you changed things up on your corn. Did you extrapolate the stuff that you did on your corn? Now, do you say, there's something I learned from growing 296 bushel corn to make my prize, I'm going to take some of those same tactics, practices, products over here to wheat, sorghum, whatever.
Yeah, we already have on the wheat. We put some PGRs on the seed treatment, and before it went into dormancy, we did a couple other things, and starting to get ready to finish top dressing some wheat with some same products that we used on the corn.
What do you consider yourself best at? Corn, sorghum, wheat, sunflowers. When I think of where you are, I think sunflowers, grain, sorghum. What are you best at? Hey, everybody has one thing that they excel at. Nobody is good at everything, right, Nelson?
That's for sure. I'd say we're trying to do good on all fronts. I don't think I have one that I'm just over the top at. We're trying to push everything that we can to do better.
What weakness did you strengthen because of paying attention to some of the extreme ag stuff? What thing do you think you got better at over the last couple of years because of us?
Anything? Just management styles, intensive management, looking at every detail that you can and trying to influence everything that's in your control.
Anything that you stopped doing? You stopped doing because you just talked about nitrogen reduction. That's a big one right there because that's money, and also that keeps the regulatory thing at bay. Is there anything you've stopped doing or something you're like, you know what, this was something that the old man I'm working with always said do it, and I said, no, we're going to try this. Is there anything that you got a little blowback on?
No, not really. We've more or less just added to what we've been doing. What we've done in the past has seemed to work really well. I guess we're starting to pull back on just a solid rate of seed or fertilizer across the field. So we're trying to do more variable rate fertilizer, variable rate seeding, that type of thing. But we haven't just completely stopped yet. We're still getting to that point.
Well, I've recorded enough stuff with the guys, Kelly Garrett in particular, about variable rate on seeding and then also variable rate on fertility. Now, Grant, he's got a lot of wide range from the tops of the hills to the bottom of the hills where he is. I'm guessing you don't have that. Do you think you get as big of a bang for your buck in the kind of soils you have in western Oklahoma as you would there on variable rate applications of both seed and fert?
I think we will. This is our second year working. We're doing grid samples on our ground, and we've backed it down. We don't have as many zones for fertility. What we have done this year is we're using a program that puts all of our previous yield maps together, and we're going to make a variable rate seeding map off of that. Where we farm, we've got a lot of gas wells in the field. So there's 200 by 200 foot squares and a road going to it that a lot of heat gets in. So we're trying to lessen our population around those spots where the heat gets in to maybe boost that yield.
Because you think that you're burning up money on seed that's never going to give you a return when you're close to that problem?
Yes, we are. You can see it on the maps and on the prescription maps we've made so far. I mean, there's probably 120 foot radius around the outside of that where we could really back off our population.
These oil wells, gas wells you're talking about, and basically, is it fair to say that you're a fossil fuel tycoon? You just farm for the hell of it and you just make all your money off of these fossil fuel wells? Is that what
No.
You're talking about?
No, not at all. They're to me, they're more of a nuisance than anything.
But you don't even own them, right?
Right.
Right. Tidbit, lesson, takeaway, something you'd like to share with others that you have, you know, something that you live by, something that's really helped you. Like, you know, be my guidance. What thing would you tell me?
What I found out is your strip tiller and your planter pass are your most important of the year. There's nothing, if you mess those two up, there's nothing that you can do to fix it afterwards. No amount of water inputs will fix your mistakes there. So I just try to have the patience to make sure we do it right the first time.
That's a big one. And use GPS, use all the latest technology. And you know what we've heard from our guys, from Chad on down, they don't have the newest tractor, but they make sure that the guts in there, is that what you've done too? Like you make sure you've got the new, to make sure your strip till and your planter are all in that same line, you've got the good stuff?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, to use the RTK guidance, we strip till 12 rows and plant 16, and you can't find the guess middle. that's pretty cool when that happens. And getting out with a shovel or something and digging behind yourself, because you can, you'll leave air pockets sometimes with a strip till, and when you plant on it, the seed falls 8 inches deep and it's never coming up. So it's just making sure you're doing it right the first time.
Strip till and planter are the two most important tools. You've updated the technology part of it. Well, maybe not the plant. Like the guys talk about the planter and the tractor don't need to be brand new, but your technology is current.
It is, yes.
And that's the most important thing. And then checking to make sure that you're not planting something that falls 8 inches. I've never seen a good result from something planted 8 inches besides a tree.
No, you'll have big gaps in your field.
I would think so. Cool. His name is Nelson Rents. He's a member of Extreme Ag. I wanted to get him on here and talk about some cool stuff since he's learning from what we do. And that's why we're here, which is really, I guess, rewarding for us to hear, because that's why we're producing this stuff. He's a guy, I'm an Oklahoma farm guy. And I guess I'm really appreciative of you coming on here. Thanks for staying with me and also for doing what you do.
For sure. Thanks for the invite. I enjoyed it.
He's a third place strip till irrigated category in Oklahoma. And yes, all kidding aside, me picking on about probably 43 bushels. It was 296 bushels. So congratulations to him. Till next time, thanks for being here. You know what? Hundreds of videos that you can learn from here at Extreme Ag. I've produced hundreds of these podcasts. The guys shoot them in their field. Go to extremeag.farm and share them around, because you know what? It's like a free library that can help you. There's categories that are going to appeal to you and some that probably don't have as much application. That's fine. Find what you want. It's just like going to the library, and it's free and it's easy. You can listen to it when you're out there working in your fields. Also, we have the Extreme Ag Show. Don't miss it. The Extreme Ag Show is awesome. It shows everything behind the scenes. It's got some really cool stuff. You can find it on YouTube or on Acres TV. So next time, thanks for being here. I'm Damian Mason. This is Extreme Ag's Cutting the Curve.
That's a wrap for this episode of Cutting the Curve. Make sure to check out extremeag.farm for more great content to help you squeeze more profit out of your farming operation. Cutting the Curve is brought to you by Kloss, where machines aren't just made, they're made for more. Visit kloss.com and start cutting your curve with cutting-edge equipment.